Blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding. For the gain from her is better than gain from silver, and her profit better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand. In her left hand are riches and honors. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called blessed. The Lord, by wisdom, founded the earth. By understanding, he established the heavens. By his knowledge, the deeps broke open, and the clouds dropped down the dew. My son, do not lose sight of these. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, and they will be life for your soul and adornment for your neck. Then you will walk on your way securely, and your foot will not stumble. If you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Do not be afraid of sudden terror or the ruin of the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due, when it is in your power to do it. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come again. Tomorrow I will give it, when you have it with you. Do not plan evil against your neighbor, who dwells trustingly beside you. Do not contend with a man for no reason, when he has done you no harm. Do not envy a man of violence, and do not choose any of his ways, for the devious person is an abomination to the Lord, but the upright are in his confidence. The Lord's curse is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the dwelling of the righteous. Toward the scorners he is scornful, but to the humble he gives favor. The wise will inherit honor, but fools get disgrace.
Like you, I'm sure that the notion, the events of Hurricane Irma has been on your mind this week. It certainly has been on mine as I've read the news reports and listened to all that's been anticipated and all that's unfolded. Not to mention, of course, the still ongoing cleanup from Hurricane Harvey. I mean, it's a sobering event to take into consideration that in our nation and even the nations surrounding us in the Caribbean, that there are millions of people who have gone to bed and who have woken up through the night and who have woken up in the morning with just a great sense of fear and then often loss. It's been a sobering couple of weeks for us. But amidst sort of all this ongoing disaster and difficulty, about a week ago, I read a little story that caught my attention. It was about one local inhabitant outside of Houston that has stood its ground. If you look at the very back portion of the picture behind me, it's this 1,000-year-old big tree, as it's known, appropriate title, big tree, that takes up residence at Goose Island State Park. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Division posted a photo of this tree on August 28th. You can see it's surrounded by the wreckage of its brethren. And on their social media site, they wrote this, that the younger trees may have perished in the hurricane, but the big tree stood its ground because, quotes, you don't get old by being weak. Great line. You don't get old by being weak. That this big tree is actually one of the oldest in the United States. It's withstood hurricanes, fires, and even a Civil War battle in 1864. It's much loved by its residents. It's inspired more than a handful of poetic writings, usually written from the tree's perspective, as one artist expressed her admiration in this way. Cold fingers of ice have touched my heartwood. Dust-dried days of sandstorms have scoured my skin. Torrents of rain driven by gales have rushed at me, and I have swayed, but stayed unbroken. I pulled this article and poem out of my Evernote files this week because it made me think of the image of wisdom as a tree. Nate read it for us this morning, Proverbs 3:18. She, wisdom, is a tree of life. To those who lay hold of her, those who hold her fast are called blessed. Devastating experiences will come upon all of us at some point in time. And some of us, it'll be a great duration of them. It seems time after time. I have a friend who says, it seems like you're either heading into difficulty, you're in difficulty, or you're coming out of difficulty. But wherever it may be, difficulty is always on the horizon. You know that, don't you? Because life is it's difficult, it's frail, and it's broken. And there will be people who stood by you once who will be blown away like the small trees that face the pressures of Hurricane Harvey. But in the midst of all of that, we have this little word picture, Proverbs 3:18. But the one who lays hold of the tree of life of wisdom will remain rooted and blessed in life. Because wisdom keeps you steady and will grant you security. Or as the last line of the tree poem puts it, I have swayed, but stayed unbroken. That's essentially what we've been learning together in these few weeks that we've been moving through this series in the book of Proverbs. That wisdom will teach you how to stay steady in life. Wisdom will give you understanding and insight about how to live as a Christian in an increasingly secular culture, which is a very difficult task. Proverbs actually provides God's people with instructions on how to deal skillfully with the practical affairs of life, like how to relate to God, creation, friends, and government. And this morning, as we open up the scriptures together, we have another opportunity to take hold of wisdom and to grow into skillful people. But before we jump into the passage, let me just remind us about the layout of this book. Proverbs is basically broken up into two sections. The first 9 chapters it's like the preamble to the book about here's why you should listen to the wisdom of this book. And there's this conversation that unfolds between a father and a son, where the dad is, he's revealing to his son the beauty and the benefits of wisdom, so that his boy will catch the vision for what he's saying and will be ready to take hold of wisdom for himself. And the proper proverbial statements that show up in chapters 10 through 31. So, first 9 chapters, preamble, 10 through 31, actually the Proverbs in and of themselves, all those little short sayings, the pithy statements packed full of power, spoken in brevity. And then in chapter 3, though, we're still in the preamble. And so we have another talk between this father and his son, where the dad says, of course, some things that he said previously so in the first 2 chapters, but it shouldn't be a surprise to us, because what father doesn't repeat himself? When I was thinking about this week, when I was growing up, one of the most repeated lines that I heard from my own dad would come up when I would say something like, are we going to rake the lawn tomorrow? He would say, what's this we stuff? Do you have a mouse in your pocket? And he would say, no, son, we aren't going to rake the lawn. You are going to rake the lawn. I heard that mouse in my pocket line so many times that I now find myself repeating it to my own boys. Like I said, what dad doesn't repeat himself? Well, the wise father of Proverbs repeats himself very purposefully in verses 13 through 20 by telling his son a poem in praise of wisdom. This is our first point for this morning. Beginning of verse 13, it's a poem in praise of wisdom. This isn't a poem of rhymes, like that funny one from that movie, The Princess Bride, Stop rhyming and I mean it, anybody want a peanut? No, it's not one of those types of poems, but it's a poem that's packed full of imagery. It's a poem in praise of wisdom. Look with me here. The first picture of wisdom comes in a comparison of wisdom to silver and gold. Verse 13, blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding. For the gain from her is better than gain from silver, and her profit better than gold. Or we could say, having wisdom makes you richer than money ever will. But because you can lose or have destroyed all of your earthly possessions in a hurricane, in a bad business deal, or in a hospital stay that leaves you buried in bills. But wisdom is better than money and sports memorabilia collections or whatever it is for you, because those types of things can be lost, but wisdom can never be lost or destroyed. Wisdom's actually better because it shapes you into the type of person who can enjoy the good gifts of life without being enslaved to them. Listen how one commentator put it. It says, wisdom is better than money because money can put food on the table, but not friends around the table. Money can buy a house, but it can't produce a home. Money can buy a woman jewelry, but it can't buy her real love. But wisdom gives physical, spiritual, and relational blessings. Wisdom can create happy homes, deep friendships, and treasures that can't be valued by marketplace prices. The point that the father's pressing home is that riches won't ultimately make you happy, but that wisdom will. Because wisdom changes you. It rightly orders within us the things that we're made to love. So then you go, what's the point of application? Well, it's pretty simple. The best investment that you can make in life is the pursuit of God's wisdom and understanding. Charles Schwab has a place. Wisdom has a greater place. Having wisdom makes you richer than money ever will. And notice, secondly, how willingly wisdom is to give of herself. Verse 16, long life is in her right hand, and in her left hand are riches and honor. It's just one of those delightful word pictures. Because think about that game that you play with a little kid, where you put your hands behind your back, and you move a treasure back and forth between the two hands, and then you say to the little boy, okay, which hand's it in? If you pick the right one, I'll give you the treasure. And they say, right when you go, too bad. And then they say, left when you go, too bad. No, you're not being fair. But look at what woman wisdom says. She says, if you play that game with me, you'll never lose. Because you say to me, right hand. She says, how about the gift of long life? She says to me, what about left hand? How about relational blessings and provision of resources? With her, you never lose. She won't keep anything back from the one who truly seeks her. How wonderful is that? Do you think of God as stingy? Then listen to wisdom. She's generous. Her insight leads a person to enjoy a good and long life. Of course, she's a poetic expression of wisdom. There's poetry here, but take it for what it is. She's generous. But of course, you now say to yourself, okay, long life and quality of life, but we all know rotten people who seem to have it all and who live long lives. And then you say to yourself, what about the godly young person who dies young under sad circumstances? Which is a reminder to us that the Proverbs aren't guarantees. But don't miss the main lesson, because you've gotten caught off guard about the, well, what about this? It's a fair question, the what abouts, but the reality of life is this. I'm not even going to illustrate it, just do a Google search later. But the reality of life for those who live wildly and seem to prosper is they more often than not end up being lonely and discontent when the clock starts to tick towards the end. Because they have much, but they don't have anything that's of lasting value. Money can buy you a lot, but it can't make you content with your lot in life. And while a good Christian woman may die young with very little to her name and in relative obscurity, the promise of the gospel to us is that through Jesus, the riches of eternity become hers the moment she wakes in the paradise of heaven. You see, the Proverbs have a now and a not yet aspect to them. The rewards of Proverbs may be partially ours now, but for the Christian, they will be certainly fully ours in the age to come. That's why the Father has crafted this poem in praise of poetry. He's spoken of her being lastingly precious, very generous. And now thirdly, we're told that walking in her ways are pleasant. Verse 17, her ways are the ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. Pleasant is a lovely word to use in English. I was thinking about my afternoon yesterday. I had a pleasant afternoon. I sat in a hammock for a little while. I watched the Indians win. I was like, that was a pretty good day. It was a pleasant afternoon. And the way that's being used here in verse 17 is all of that and even more full of goodness. The sage is saying here that if you walk in the way of wisdom, or maybe think about it like this, if you live your life in the way that God has ordered it to be, you'll discover that it is agreeable to your inward self. It means that life will often be delightful even when it's difficult. You'll see beauty even in sadness. You see, pleasantness isn't the absence of turmoil, but it's the addition of being satisfied and fulfilled with your lot in life. God's ways aren't always easy, but they certainly won't be bland and boring. Following the path of wisdom will lead to pleasantness. And now verse 18, we see that wisdom not only leads to pleasantness, but it also brings security. As the metaphor of woman wisdom is now combined together with the tree of life. She is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called blessed. Wisdom is like the big tree of Houston. that's made it through the storm. Its roots go down so deep that it won't be knocked over. If you were to tether yourself to her, you'd be held secure. I think this imagery here is clearly intended to be a little nod to the Garden of Eden, where there was once a tree that granted life. Speaking of Eden, we also see that wisdom is associated with creation. Verse 19, the Lord, by wisdom, founded the earth. By understanding, he established the heavens. By his knowledge, the deeps broke down and the clouds dropped down the dew. We could spend, just an entire Sunday on this verse alone, but I'll give you the homework assignment of looking up Colossians 1 later this afternoon. And for now, we're reminded from verse 19 that creation is ordered and not random, because God has established it by his wisdom. But having said that, you say to yourself, but there seems to be something off in creation. After all, what about all these things that have been happening in the news? Everybody's all agitated about the hurricanes, but what about all the wildfires that seem to be going crazy on the West Coast? You scratch your head and you say, well, what's that all about? Well, this is why Christianity is such a helpful framework to view life. Because you don't just have to go, I don't know, or just seems to be doing its own thing. You go, no, what's wrong with creation? Well, what's wrong with creation is the same thing that's wrong with us. In the same way that humanity has been disordered by sin's curse, creation suffers the same effects. But even the disorder of creation, like two hurricanes in 2 weeks' time, aren't the result of creation spiraling uncontrollably. Even when creation rages, it's never beyond God's control. And one day soon, the New Testament tells us that God is going to restore all of creation back to peace and pleasantness. As through the Lord Jesus, God is reconciling the world to himself. Certainly you and me, but the whole world to himself. He's going to put it all back together. Wisdom created. God's wisdom sustains. And God's wisdom is going to restore. And if God's wisdom can do all of that, then what greater incentive do you have to say to yourself than to say, I want that same type of wisdom too. Because I'm certainly not going to create a world out of nothing, but I got to figure out what I'm going to do on Monday and the week ahead of me. Wisdom says, God's wisdom will come to you. God's wisdom is a possession that brings life back to order. It's a lovely picture. Brings life back to order. Do you have the poetic picture here? But wisdom is a possession that rewards the person who takes hold of it. And then, of course, through the gospel, we discover that wisdom is even more than a possession. We come to understand that wisdom is a person, that Jesus Christ is actually wisdom himself. We've got to keep him in mind as we move through these chapters. Because you see, what Solomon knew in part about wisdom, we now actually know in whole because we have all of Scripture. So Solomon was able to advance things to a certain point, but Jesus becomes the one who takes it across the finish line. So Solomon, remember back in chapter 2, he says to his young listener, he says, write my words upon your heart. But Jesus, who's greater than Solomon, says, I will send my spirit, will write God's words on your heart. Solomon's able to say, he could point to God as the one who disciplines those he loves. But Jesus points to himself and promises to personally train us in love. Jesus Christ is the answer to the riddle of Proverbs. In him, says the Apostle Paul, are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. So, as we start to settle into our pace through Proverbs, we need to keep looking forward into the storyline of Scripture. We have to read the Old Testament in anticipation of Jesus' incarnation. Because there are themes that show up in the beginning, then reappear in the middle, and are anticipated at the end. Just, for instance, think about the tree of life of Proverbs 3:18. Because the story of the Bible begins in a garden with a special tree. But the pleasant setting turns into a place of sadness because that tree leads to judgment. But then another tree shows up later in the storyline of the Bible when the God-man, the Lord Jesus, is crucified upon a tree that opens up the door of forgiveness for us. As through his atoning death, Jesus has earned our salvation for us. And then the imagery of the tree shows up again at the end of the Bible. What's to come? And it's a picture of healing. It's a picture of provision. You see, we have to read the book of Proverbs in anticipation of Jesus. He's more than a tree to lay hold of. He's the person who will take hold of you and fill your life with his blessing. Your inner life will know pleasantness when you treasure Jesus as your prized possession. Your inner life will know pleasantness when you treasure Jesus as your prized possession. That's what the Father is trying to convince his Son about, and why he's put together this little poem in praise of wisdom. He says, Son, I know you're ignoring most of the things that I'm saying to you, but I'm pleading with you, please, hear me out on this. Take hold of wisdom. And then, in the remaining verses, the dad gets even more increasingly practical as he points out three things that wisdom will give to the one who takes hold of her. Wisdom will give you lots of things, but at least in this talk from the Father, three things. He'll give you, wisdom will give you peace of mind, skillfulness in relationships, and God's blessing. First of all, verses 21 through 26, wisdom will give you peace of mind. Verse 21, my son, do not lose sight of these. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, and they will be life for your soul and adornment for your neck. Then you will walk on your way securely, and your foot will not stumble. If you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Do not be afraid of sudden terror or the ruin of the wicked when it comes, for the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. Wisdom, number one, will give you peace of mind, which is what I think most of us need, since our minds are usually racing and hardly ever at peace. We are just full of anxious and concerned thoughts because we can Google the answer to everything, and then we find out the answers to things that we didn't even want to know the answers to. It's a spiral of anxiety that grows up within us. The introvert is particularly gifted imagining the worst case scenario in about 30 seconds. So some of us particularly are troubled by an unpeaceful mind. But wisdom says that it will change you and give you peace of mind. As verses 21 and 22 implore us, keep wisdom and discretion near you. How wonderful is this? Because they are life. Keep the wisdom of this book through Jesus, and it will keep you secure from the ruin of the wicked when that comes. I really appreciate how John Atkin applies this. He says this: wisdom will give you a good night's sleep without worry. Now I've got your attention. You will sleep well because you haven't done the foolish things that cause you to stay awake worrying. You won't be afraid that you'll get caught or be found out. You won't have to lay awake thinking to yourself, what if she reads that email? What if he runs into that person? Who else knows about this? How can I make sure this never gets out? Walking in wisdom and avoiding the foolishness of sin will keep your conscience clear and your mind free from worry. And if you get wisdom, you will ultimately be safe because God is the one who watches over you all day long. Because verse 25 happens to us all. But you don't have to panic over surprises or predictions that doomsdays are coming upon us because God will be there right there with you. He will keep you safe and sound. Again, it's another now and not yet. This is generally true now, but it will be ultimately true. Even if they take your body, Jesus will take your soul to be with him. Will keep you safe. Wisdom will give you peace of mind. And then, 27 through 32, we're told that wisdom will give you skillfulness in relationships. Just look at the way the passage just opens up to us. You'll notice that there are a series of do nots that roll on one after another in this section of the chapter. Just look at it. Verses 27, 28, 29, 30, and 31, they all begin in the same way. Do not. It's a series of rapid-fire prohibitive actions that the son is not to partake in. Why? So that he can get along well with other people and doesn't incur the Lord's frown upon his life. In other words, wisdom will give you skillfulness in relationships. And really, in these verses, we're just told about the attitudes that we should cultivate in order to keep on good terms with other people. First of all, wisdom teaches us the skill of honesty and generosity. Verse 27, don't withhold good from those to whom it is due. The application of this, I think, could be very broad. Giving what is due could mean payment of wages if you're the boss. Or it could mean give what is due in terms of fees or bills and taxes. We aren't to say, can I get an extension when we have the means to cover the debt? Why? Because the person who is owed the money may be in dire need of it, and you withholding it from them may actually cause them trouble. Timeliness in a payment owed is actually, it's just an expression of love of neighbor. It's not only about being honest, it's also about being considerate. Pay what is owed in full and at the earliest possible time. That's an important skill to have in relationships. In other words, help your needy neighbor. Help your needy neighbor. Secondly, wisdom implores us to live at peace with other people. Verse 29, don't plan evil against your neighbor because they would live really close to you. Having now lived in Lakewood for just over a year, this verse resonates with me differently than I ever had before because I go, hello, neighbor. Hello, other neighbor. Hello, neighbors. You cut down your trees in our backyard this last week. Good to meet you, too. I mean, they're just surrounded by you everywhere. Verse 29, as far as it depends upon you, make it your aim to get along with everyone. Do your best to be a respectful and sensible person. You may not have the friendliest person who lives next to you, but don't mess around with their Amazon shipment. You know, don't hide it from them. Don't move it a little bit further down the hallway if you live in an apartment. Don't do those sorts of things. Be the type of neighbor that overlooks little things. Don't hold grudges. Speak well of others. Politely excuse yourself from a conversation when the gossip is getting juicy. And whatever you do, certainly, verse 30, don't contend with a man for no reason. If you're the type of person who likes to argue for the sake of an argument, then you aren't actually a very wise person. You may be verbally skilled and able to beat a person with your argument, but you've probably hurt your listener, and you've lost any influence that you hope to have upon them in the future. Wisdom implores us to live at peace, to not get into a verbal bout out of sheer peevishness. I read that in a commentary and I said, I have to use that word. Don't get in a verbal bout out of sheer peevishness when you have no grounds to do so. Wisdom. Do you get it? It really does give us skillfulness in relationships. Help your needy neighbor. Live peaceably with your next door neighbors. And thirdly, avoid your violent neighbor. Verse 31. Do not envy a man of violence. Do not choose any of his ways. You and I both know that. You go, oh yeah, I would never do such a thing. But then you see the person who is an intimidator and a bully. You see the way that they get what they want done. And you say, man, maybe I should go about it that way. Maybe I should be one of those people who shoves my way through life. But don't do that. Because God can't stand twisted souls. It's as Eugene Peterson puts it, it's the straightforward person who gets his respect. Violence, you know, can be physical. It can be verbal. It's the governor. It's the boss. It's the parent. It's even the pastor who can be a domineering individual and insist on their own demands. But don't get sucked into the vortex of their ways, because time will show it to be true. Their ways, it'll end in ruin. Instead, as Eric Lane counsels us, the best antidote is to remember that as an upright person, you have something far better than power over others. You have an intimate relationship with the ruler of the universe. And according to verse 32, you are in his confidence. You might just want to underline that verse if you're one of those sorts of people. You are in God's confidence. You may not have power over others, but your God does. Look what God does with his power in verses 33 through 35. He uses his power for the good of his own people, and he uses his power against violent people. Which just takes us to the close of the chapter, where wisdom will give you God's blessing instead of his judgment. Verse 33. The Lord's curse is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the dwelling of the righteous. Towards the scorners, he is scornful, but to the humble, he gives favor. The wise will inherit honor, but fools, a disgrace. Once again, the father, he ends his talk with a comparison of two types of people. In one column, it's the person who receives God's blessing. In the other column, it's the person who will bear his judgment. The comparison is so lopsidedly pleasant in one direction. And yet the father urges him to choose wisely, because fools can look attractive. Their ways can seem like the best ways. And yet he says, son, don't do that. Because God's judgment against you is no small thing. Because it means, verse 33, that God will be against you. He won't be in his confidence, he'll be against you. Verse 34, that God will scoff at you. Verse 35, that God will dishonor you. But would you like that? Or would you much prefer his blessing? Because wisdom will give you God's blessing, and that means, verse 32, that God will draw near to you. Verse 33, that God will bless your home. Verse 34, that God will give favor to you. Verse 35, that God will bestow honor upon you as the prize for a life well lived. You see, wisdom, friends, will give you God's blessing instead of his judgment if you will take hold of the tree of life, if you will hold fast to the Lord Jesus, who gave his life on a tree of judgment. His grace makes wisdom freely available to everyone who seeks it. Even those who've said in the past, I don't want anything to do with that. But you come today and say, will you give it to me? Both hands open up to you. Take hold of him. You already have hold of him. Keep your grip on him. And you will have the blessing of God. And then you will know the pleasantness of wisdom's ways.